your city for 30 years.
And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And that's our favorite hymn, our favorite song. This is the Taylor Report, CIT. And the reason
So the real issue is, are we going to hear it at Wimbledon?
Well, okay. There's my straight man, Phil Conlon. Thank you for the question. That last fan. There's always a guy who wants to keep going. Yes, at Wimbledon, you've been banned. You cannot... They've already announced you must not, the one thing you must not do is chant, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." So as somebody pointed out, okay, this is going to fail, because if one thing you don't do is tell people what they can't do at a sporting match. So, well, I don't know what they're going to do, call out the British Marines. And you know who's supposed to take charge is that guy who sits on the little chair and says in, out, you know, net, whatever he says. Very symptomatic. And I was just speaking to someone before the show, I won't mention his name, who said, well, they don't, at Wimbledon, it's a very upper-class event, they don't do that. But in fact, now at Wimbledon, you do have, because of the spread of Corbyn, we're going to call it Corbynism, there's bound to be some who do like him. Oh, the other thing, by the way, you can't wear a Corbyn T-shirt, which is particularly stupid, isn't it? And I'm directing that question to Phil Conlon, who is a classical underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m.
And we can wear Corbyn T-shirts when we're broadcasting on classical underground.
Absolutely.
We have not banned them. Well, we don't permit anybody to wear a Theresa May T-shirt. That would not be allowed.
Yes. Okay, so now there'll be somebody downstairs with a sign, Theresa May. If she likes, she may. It's just a sign of the times. Now, on the show today, we'll be talking at about 5:15 with Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com, as you know. I think that's his full name. Stephen has written a great book called Washington's Long War on Syria. For our listeners in New York, I'll tell you, and the U.S. will be interested. He's going to be speaking in New York City on July the 14th, and it is going to be at 7 p.m. at 147 West 24th, and it's a hands-off Syria coalition, .net. We're very glad that Stephen of Ottawa is going to be in Stephen of New York. But today we're going to be talking to him about an article he wrote for gowans.wordpress.com, and he's, of course, the title of his site is What's Left. He's talking about sesquicentennial. There, I said it. Can you say sesquicentennial?
Sesquicentennial.
I thought that was difficult. Have you been rehearsing, practicing?
Well, I've said it. I knew that it was coming up, right?
It's so rare we use that word.
Well, no, the thing is, in classical music, we're always commemorating a composer's birth or his death. So we use sesquicentennial. It is a tongue twister, you know, because it's an occasion to play a lot of music by somebody you like Bach or Beethoven or, you know.
Yes. Phil is in the line of music which goes way back. And when they say 50s, it could be 1850s, 1750s.
Yeah, all those things. But that's absolutely true.
For most of us with pop music, we say way back. We say 50s, 1950s, which is way, way back.
Well, I play that on my show too, you know, by the way, because I play Fats Domino from time to time, and he's from the 1950s. Yeah. And he's still alive. And he's still with us.
Is Fats with... on this show, we love Fats Domino because... We pointed out at the time of Katrina, the cry went up, New Orleans is underwater, where's Fats? That was the first question to be answered. What has happened to Fats Domino? He was such a great figure. And he does live in his old neighborhood, never moved away. And it's just a very noticeable address on the street. But he's a very loyal guy, very local, and doesn't have, you know, he didn't head off and buy something in the Bahamas. I'm sure he could afford it if he wanted to. And he's a tremendous influence. I don't want to say something about the, in the time here, about the sesquicentennial. One touchy matter that everybody now understands you have to address is the question of what is this 150 years old stuff? Because the arrival of the Europeans, the English, the French, and the Spanish primarily, totally destroyed an indigenous culture and meant to. And to this day, the question is, isn't that still the intention? And there's always a lot of hand-wringing how we might correct things, and wouldn't it be nice, and shouldn't we? So I have a suggestion apropos of how we tell history. Only a few years back, Stephen Harper had us all with these clips about the War of 1812, and he had his little routine where there's General Brock standing next to Tecumseh, standing next to the a French officer from Montreal. Of course, something that did not happen in the three of them. Brock did meet Tecumseh. It was quite brief, and there's really no evidence that they were that fond of each other. But we just passed an anniversary. On June 24th in 1813, Americans were defeated at Beaver Dam. And if you go down the highway here to Niagara Falls, you can find it near Thoreau, where Brock University is. This is where the battle happened. Now, I think I just said the British defeated the Americans. Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, just to, you know, if they could read the record back, as the lawyers say. So I misstated, and this is a story that is misstated so often, and it would really help relations if we start off with fundamental respect to who was there that day and who won the battle. The battle was won by 300 Mohawks who were from what is now Montreal. I think it's pronounced Kanasagui.
Kanasataki and Kanawaga, those two.
Kanawaga. I'm going to go with Kanawaga.
Kanawaga, all right.
And
still there.
They were brought there by the British. It was under British command, but they were Mohawks. They were Catholics, and they spoke French. And their commanding officer was French, and he was married to a Métis woman. And what happened is very important to get the story straight. They had been brought after the Americans captured Fort George in May of 1813. And the Americans had wanted to go to Burlington and capture the Burlington Heights, where the British had a force. And that was their next target. So they had a problem. They were hemmed in. The native forces, that is to say the Mohawks, had come under this Métis officer, married to Métis, pardon me, and their job was to watch the Americans at Fort George to see what they were going to do, and to then a plan would be developed. The Americans knew that they had a little base close to what is now Beaver Dam. Was then called Beaver Dam. And so the Americans decided they're going to go and knock out that place, that stronghold. And so on June 22nd, 23rd, they left the Fort George with a in force, they call it, and they were going to go and take care of this British. It wasn't a fort or anything. It was just a forward position. That forward position was completely, all the fighters there were Mohawk. So as the Americans progressed, they found that it was probably not a good idea to have left the fort, because they went into the forest on a bad road, and they noticed that they seemed to be surrounded. And instead of doing the smart thing, which is turn around, they kind of sat down or thought they'd make a defense. They were badly mauled, and then they surrendered. At that point, they had an interesting problem. The American commander wanted to surrender. He was scared to death. And they, but the Mohawks didn't speak English, and neither did their commander. I think his name was Ducharme. I'll look it up. So they brought the British officer, Fitzgibbon, and he accepted the surrender of the American. By the way, one of the things he told him was, I think you better surrender because there are 300 Mohawks here. I think he probably said 3,000. And he said, we cannot control them. He had a racist way of, the indigenous fighters, which the British always treated them as though they were cannibals, or they wanted the Americans to think that. And they would always say, I can't control these people. So they, you know, they're going to cut your ears off. They're going to do all these things. So you probably, if you make nice, surrender to me, everything will be okay. So he surrendered. Now, the story is told here that Laura Secord, the wife of a British officer, had overheard the Americans talk about their plan to move against the Beaver Dam. And that they, and then she had gone through the woods and delivered the warning and alerted the British. That is an insult to the native fighters, the Mohawks, who were watching the fort. When she ran through the woods, she ran into those Mohawks who were watching. They said, who is this coming down the trail? They intercepted her and said, and then she said, she had a message. By the way, there's really no reason to think to trust her. The people that the commanders trusted were their own guerrillas and spies who were watching the Americans. The Americans in Fort George had lost personnel. Every time they would go out to try to get a bucket of water or take a cow around the fort, somebody would get killed. So they were being watched. Their strategy was that they thought they were in force, and they would be, since they had greater numbers, that they would be able to prevail. It wasn't a big secret what they were doing. Laura Secord didn't have any secrets. So I would say, if you want to straighten out a Canadian history and show some respect, let us have a monument at Fort George and at Beaver Dam to the 300 Mohawks who won the day. And by the way, I'm saying on the Taylor Report, I don't know their names. I know the name of their commanding officer, Ducharme. However, why don't we know the names of any of the 300? Because they were up against a regular group of American fighters, but they didn't, we don't know, and we know the names of the Americans they captured. Why don't we know the names of any of the 300? They are, by the way, Roman Catholics, as they say. That means that they were baptized, and every single one of their names is in a record. Am I right, Phil?
You were absolutely.
The Catholics kept a record,
and they would also have Western names, because when they got baptized, they would. That's one of
they would give
they
them
had to do. You had to have a name of a saint. You
know. So it could be done, and just take Laura Secord. I'm not going to take anything away from her in the sense that she wanted to be helpful. She wanted to be helpful. However, they were quite aware of the movements, because those 300 Mohawks had been brought there for the very purpose of tracking the American forces if they left Fort George. So the way to correct things and is to remove the significance of Secord and put the 300 Mohawks in the front where they belong, and give us their names. It was a significant victory in War of 1812. And put the name of Ducharme. And I would ask, make people worry about their history, why don't we know about all this anyway? It's there for the record, but it is not noted. So that's our contribution.